And good evening. Here we are, the end of February already. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight, brought to you on the Cable Radio Network. And tonight, our program is being sponsored by the Unarius Academy of Sciences. You know, in the UFO field, there are many, many ways of looking at one of mankind's most perplexing problems. Unarius has one of those ways. We're going to be telling you more about them later on in the show. But remember, get your pen and pencil, because all this time during the broadcast, there are going to be bits of information that you're going to want to mark down, you're going to have on your record. And if you want to find out more about Unarius, you can reach them at a toll-free number that the Unarius Academy of Sciences have produced that last year in 1992 won the EBE Awards. Don't know what it is? Well, hang in there. We're going to tell you more about it in just a few minutes. But tonight's show promises to be especially a fascinating one. You know, a number of years ago, while I was doing some research for UFO Magazine, I became intrigued by some claims about lunar phenomenon, things happening literally right above our heads. Well, a few weeks ago, I was doing a guest spot on a very large radio station back in North Carolina, and during the course of the broadcast, I had a telephone call from a gentleman whom I'm going to introduce to you this evening. His name is Jim Sylvan, and he has something that I think you're going to find as fascinating as what I have. Being a researcher in the medical field back in 1979, Jim was researching for a book that he wanted to do on the Apollo missions and going to the moon. Well, in 1979, he read a book that changed the way he looked at practically everything. The name of that book was Somebody Else is on the Moon. And if you've been listening to this broadcast for any length of time, you'll know that a number of months ago, we did a show where this book was mentioned rather prominently. The author's name was George Leonard, and when Jim read this book, he decided to follow up and find out if Leonard was telling the truth or not. And what Leonard was saying is that there have been a literal plethora of things happening on the moon, even now, as we're sitting here. Just coming to the radio station tonight, I looked up and it's sitting up there just as bright and as clear as you can believe. And tonight, you're going to be hearing what's going on. So I would like to introduce Jim and thank you, Jim, for joining us here on the show.
Don, it's a pleasure to be speaking with your audience tonight. As a former resident of California, it's exciting to be talking to them.
That's right. You, as a matter of fact, are a California native, aren't you?
That's correct.
Well, tell me, Jim, in 1979, what had caused you to start proceeding with research to do something on the Apollo missions? Was this just a fascination or a hobby that you had?
I believe, like many people my age, the events of the Apollo missions crystallized what growing up in America was like in the 60s. And it became a fascination of mine, not only in the scientific aspects of the missions, but what seemed to be almost a spiritual awakening in most of the astronauts that came back. I mean, if you stop to think about it, stepping onto another planet, another heavenly body, is something that very few people in the world have ever experienced, obviously, a handful of astronauts, and it seemed to have a profound effect on them.
Well, that's true, and let's be absolutely accurate. A number of those astronauts, when they came back, went through some very traumatizing times. A number of them even ended up in psychological counseling. I know of an unfortunate couple that came back with a severe alcohol problem. And having been in this field for a number of years and having spoken to many people that have been in this field much longer than I have, one of the rumors that circulated was that these people came back because of what they witnessed on the lunar surface.
That's pretty much on target with what I felt. Something up there, aside from the actual event, something up there had a very profound effect on their psyche.
So you found George Leonard's book, Somebody Else Is on the Moon. Is that when you decided to hit up NASA and find out what they had in their archives?
Yeah, I found out quite by accident, although George Leonard gave ample evidence of where to locate this stuff. Very few of us are lucky enough to live in the Washington, D.C. area. And I found that there was literally a warehouse of over a million photographs taken not only of the Apollo missions, but dating back all the way to some of the early Surveyor missions, the Lunar Orbiter series, all the unmanned missions that prepared us for an actual landing on the moon.
Such as the Ranger missions.
That's right. That's right. And the Ranger mission, as a matter of fact, had some of the most unusual photographs of all of them.
Well, you know, Jim, I have, I was lucky to pick up a copy, and I'm sure you know who Donald Keyhoe was.
Sure do.
A copy of his book published in 1955 entitled, and it sounds lurid, but believe me, it was literally some first-class research. The title of the book is The Flying Saucer Conspiracy. And in chapter 5 of this book, it's entitled Enigma on the Moon. Now, we're talking about events that were happening in 1952, 1953, and 1954. Now, let me read this sentence to you. On the night of July 29, 1953, John J. O'Neill, science editor of the Herald Tribune, settled himself at his telescope for an evening's observation of the moon. It was 6:30 Universal Time, and the moon on its northerly course was approaching the equator when O'Neill made an amazing discovery. Stretching across the Mare Crisinum crater was a gigantic bridge. And you sent me a copy, a photograph of that.
That's correct. Mare Crisinum area of the moon for centuries actually has been a site of many unusual occurrences. And as you stated before,
Literally for centuries.
In fact, most of the early observations obviously were made by Earth-based telescopes, and although the clarity wasn't quite as much as the photo that I sent you that was taken with a high-tech camera actually orbiting the moon, some of the features stood out, and really some of the most famous some of the most famous astronomers of our time have periodically made references to some of the transient phenomena.
Well, O'Neill was expecting to be roundly attacked by the astronomical community, and needless to say, he was not disappointed. But in August, 1 month later, the existence of the bridge was confirmed by the great British astronomer, Dr. H.P. Wilkins, and the following month, Patrick Moore, who was a leading member of the British Astronomical Association, verified it too. Now, how in the world can something like this be kept hidden from the American public? And we have to reiterate, that bridge was not there months before. Suddenly, here it is, at least a 12-mile structure stretching across this crater, and nobody talks about it? They called it not an artificial bridge, but somehow a natural bridge popped into existence. This is how the newspapers reported it.
Yeah, you could spend a lifetime trying to figure out what the motive was of the government in the early days to the scientific community to hide these facts, but that could be an exercise in futility, really. The best that I can tell you is that the photographs actually show something as to what it is, as to whether it's a real bridge. You know, we use Earth terms sometimes to describe some of these objects. But who can say? The best that we can say is that there are definitely objects of seemingly intelligent construction.
Well, then I have another photograph here that I'm looking at. And let's see, I don't have the information in front of me, but I can tell you, Jim, which picture it is, Volume 1, Photo 2. Now, this was from the first volume that you put together. And it shows two objects that were moving across the lunar surface, and the trail behind them is plainly visible.
Yeah, that's a pretty unusual picture. That was taken, I believe, by the Lunar Orbiter series. The reason that is so unusual is that NASA, in describing the photograph itself, describes the larger object but completely fails to show the smaller object. Both of them seem to emanate outside from inside a crater or a little craterlet, and both of them have very regular track marks behind it.
Oh, not only regular. If I didn't know better, it would look like somebody were driving through a snowy field with a snowmobile. That's how distinct these tracks are.
Yes, and
boy, I wish we had a camera. I would like to be able to show the audience this. This is literally breathtaking.
Yeah, this may. I hope this is not too difficult tonight. At least we can pique the imagination. But be assured to tell your audience that these photos do exist. And
we'll talk in a little bit about how they may be able to get some.
That's correct.
Jim, I've got to take a break, so hold on, and we will be back in just a moment. We are back. My guest this evening, Jim Sylvan, and the topic is transient lunar phenomenon, things that are happening on the moon. If you'd like to speak to my guest or myself, and you live in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, almost blew that one. Jim, are you there?
I sure am.
Okay, we already have a call. So
terrific.
Stand by. We have Bert from Burbank and Salmon's Cable. Good evening, Bert.
Hi, guys. Talking about a subject, Don, you and I actually spoke about this a number of weeks ago. Jim, I wondered if you can shed some light on something with your research. You guys mentioned H.P. Wilkins, the astronomer. It's my understanding, and Don, I think that I also read this in the Keyhole book, that he was about to publish photographs that he had taken of the structures, and they were supposed to be extremely good and clear. And I've never been able to track those down by him. Jim, do you know specifically of any photographs attributed to him?
No, I'm sorry. I can't shed any light for you on that. I will tell you, however, that a wonderful atlas that is available by Patrick Moore, Atlas of the Moon, I believe it's called, shows many, many, many clear photographs from Earth-based telescopes, and some of the phenomena are clearly visible in these pictures.
Now, some of the phenomena, one that you're probably familiar with, and I've always been interested in, and again, maybe you can shed some light on it, was the very large W that actually looked like some kind of man-made cloud formation. You familiar with that picture?
In which area of the moon?
Can't really tell you. It's been so long since I've actually seen it.
Well, actually, Bert, on a number of these photographs, and I have the one I'm holding right now, I'm looking at it through a magnifying glass at the bridge-like structure, but a number of these photographs, in fact, appear to have English letters carved into the side of meteor craters and so forth. Now, what that could be, God only knows.
But let me just say one thing, Don, that when you start to look at these photographs, you'll see very quite a few objects and shapes which are common in Earth cultures. You'll see English alphabet letters, fleur-de-lis, if you're familiar with what a fleur-de-lis looks like, pyramids, crosses, and it might be a leap in logic to associate that with cultures on Earth. But at the same time, it makes you step back and wonder.
Well, that's true, but you certainly can't ignore your eyes. And as a matter of fact, this photograph with the Mare Crisinum structure also has something that you pointed out to me, Jim. And I'm looking at it right now. It seems to be a very long, tall structure coming out of the side of the only thing I can describe it as is an artificial appearing wall. And it seems to have a ball-like ornament on the top of it, almost like an antenna.
Yeah, I would probably have to say that's one of my favorites. It's perplexing. It's the pole structure that is coming out of this armor plate, which is the way I describe it, is so tall that it's actually casting a shadow back on the plate.
And I can see the shadow with my naked eye.
Yeah, it's clearly visible. And what's interesting is, as I was doing these radio shows across the country a few years back, I got not only calls and letters, but actual photographs that amateur photographers or amateur astronomers had taken from their Earth-based telescopes. And although the image is very hazy, they would describe the exact same structure to me, and almost as a confirmation of what I've seen in these pictures.
Okay, guys, I got so wrapped up in the conversation, we're running just a couple of minutes behind, but we've got to take another break, so both of you stand by.
Good.
And, you know, UFO Magazine is our Beck. Okay, guys.
Hey there.
Go ahead, Bert.
Let me jump in and say something about a commercial you just did about the Hoagland UN briefing. I have seen that, and anybody who is interested in this field absolutely has to at least see that. And it's the best thing for hard information that says other beings have been around for an awfully long period of time.
Well, you know, to make sure we keep on track with our subject tonight, Bert, I just spoke to Richard Hoagland a couple of days ago, and I was talking to him about this very subject, transient lunar phenomenon.
Right.
And he has just come into some information and photographs which show some structures, according to Hoagland, that are very similar to what he claims is in the Cydonia region of Mars on the Moon. We're going to be talking about that at some depth. There's a tremendous story here.
That, strangely, you're reading my mind there, because that's what I was going to comment. It would be interesting to see Hoagland and his crew, the mathematicians and computer scientists, get a hold of the pictures that Jim is talking about. And one thing before I go, let me hit on something that maybe either one of you can shed some light on, too. There is a tale, and I have never seen it actually documented to a point to where I could say solidly it's absolute fact, that one of the crew out moonwalking, one of the first moonwalks, saw a number of saucer-shaped objects along a crater.
Yes, Bert, that was detailed in Timothy Good's Above Top Secret. Allegedly, it was experienced by Neil Armstrong. And later on, according to Good sources, a former scientific type at NASA confirmed that.
Now, I believe it was Good who said that a ham radio operator had recorded that portion, and that portion had been left out, obviously, of the tapes that the regular people got. Now, Jim, are you familiar? Have you ever heard of the actual tape? Have you had any contact with that actual tape?
I've never heard the tape, but I've read much documentation on it.
How sure can we be that that actually occurred?
The problem is that a lot of these tales end up becoming second and third hand, mm-hmm. and it's very difficult, to be real honest with you. I have never actually heard that tape. Maybe Don has, or maybe he has some insight into that. Myself, I have not.
Well, no, Jim, I have never heard that tape. I have heard about it, of course. However, one thing we have to keep in mind, especially during those days, all the astronauts that were in the Apollo program, practically all of them, I believe, were military officers or former military officers on detached duty. And if, in fact, they would talk about what is considered one of the top national security considerations, which would be encountering alien life forms, if in fact that's what it is, they would be subject to fines, imprisonment, or possibly worse.
Yeah, exactly. Guys, keep up the good work. It's interesting. Let's hear some more about some more of the things that have appeared on the moon.
Thank you, Bert.
Talk to you later.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bert, thank you.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Okay, Jim, we've got to take the half-hour break, and
good.
When we come back, I have a couple of hard questions for you.
That'll be fine.
CRN, the cable radio network, presents this program for its entertainment value only as a service to our listeners. CRN does not endorse or object to any topics or views discussed in the program.
We are back. Jim, I have in front of me a section from the Daily News newspaper dated Sunday, November 29th, 1992. And in this section, the headlines read, "Return to Moon in Limbo as NASA Struggles for Funds." 20 years later, the words still chill Harrison Jack Schmidt, one of the last two men on the moon. And I'm quoting now, "This may be the last time in this century that men will walk on the moon," President Richard Nixon declared, after Schmidt and Cernan rocketed off the lunar surface December 14, 1972. Now, there have been rumors circulating for years that one of the biggest reasons we were told we were not going back to the moon is we were told we were not welcome there.
That's personally what I believe, and I think it might lead credence to the story that Bert was relating about some of the objects that were sighted by some of the last Apollo flights to land on the moon. When you look at some of the sizes of some of these objects, it would be terrifying. Actually, some of these objects look very similar to mining equipment that we might see here on Earth, but in much, much larger dimensions. We're talking about some objects that are actually a mile long.
A mile long.
A mile long.
A piece of machinery.
A piece of machinery.
Okay, now, I guess one of the hard questions I would have to ask you if I were hearing this for the first time, how would that be possible?
Again, you have to. You almost have to get out of that Earth straitjacket that we all belong in. When you're relating these type of
now, wait a minute. Anybody in the UFO field, I've been told, belongs in a straitjacket.
Yeah, that's true. Touche. You'd again. I would love to be able to explain what this stuff is. The best that I can tell your listeners is that these objects are definitely artificially manufactured. The sizes of some of the objects are mind-boggling. As to what they are, our best guess is that it's actually a mining operation.
Well, when you were at the height of your research, now, did you ever take any of these photographs and your questions to any professional astronomers?
I'll tell you who I did approach. I approached Bruce Maccabee a number of times and really did not get a response.
Now, wait a minute. You're talking about the optical physicist who works for the Department of the Navy and is a mutual UFO network researcher.
Yes, and let me say that when I say I didn't get a response from him, I believe the reason was that he's probably approached by quite a few people with theories, and this was at the height of George Leonard's book being so popular, and the response that I got from him on the phone was very skeptical. I would like to, with some of these enhanced photos, to approach him again, and perhaps that's something you can help me with.
Well, what about astronomers per se? Because it would seem to me that that would be the natural way for anybody, with, especially with photographs as detailed as these are, to go. Now, the one I'm looking at right now, Jim, is Volume 2, Picture Number 2, which is the King Crater photograph.
Yes.
And in the upper left-hand corner, and I can see it with my naked eye, it's even much more clear when I put the magnifying glass on it. There are two structures that appear to be buildings with lit windows. And they're artificial looking. There's no other way to say it.
Yeah, the thing that gives these pictures credence is the redundancy of some of the objects that are observed. The ones that you're pointing out almost look like domed hemisphere-type objects with two lit areas in identical locations on the objects. And these two objects that you're pointing out are about close to a mile apart. And I think that's probably what, besides these being NASA photographs, I think the redundancy of particular objects showing up in many, many areas of the moon, not just in one particular area where it could be explained as a geological formation, that's probably what gives these the most credence.
All right, my guest this evening is Jim Sylvan, who has been researching transient lunar phenomenon since 1979. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. You're listening to Radio Network. And if you would like to speak to my guest, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, 100-335. Jim, another photograph I have here, which obviously is from something in orbit, or from one of the spacecraft in orbit. There appear to be, and I'm looking now almost in the center of the picture, this one is Volume 2, Picture Number 1. At the top of the photograph, or perhaps, let me see if I'm looking at it correctly, there is a large crater with something that certainly appears to be artificial working on the edge of the crater rim, and it appears to be an L-shaped thing. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. There are a couple of objects that seem to appear on the edge of some of these craters. And then let me say the craters that we're describing.
Now, this is what obviously must be, if in fact we're judging this correctly, one of the mining pieces of equipment?
Yeah, the craters that you're describing are not craters that would normally be associated with meteorite impacts. These seem to be actually the best way to describe them. Would be similar to an open mining pit on Earth.
Well, these are huge.
Yeah, and these objects appear on many, many craters, and what they appear to do is to actually shave the edges of the crater and to knock the debris down to the bottom of the crater, where you'll find similar objects performing similar functions.
But some of these photographs literally show what appears to be clouds of debris being blown out of these pits.
Yeah, there's scientists would tell you that that's possibly gas venting out of some of these craters, and that's a possibility. But it seems like there is a lot of activity by these X-shaped drones, which is what I like to describe them as.
Okay,
see a lot of these ventings.
We have a call from Kathy in Ventura on Century Cable. Good evening, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
How are you tonight?
Good, good.
Good. I listen to you, Patty, listen to you every Sunday night.
Well, great.
I'm a regular one of the MUFON clubs here in the area. I have a question for Jim Sullivan there. I was wondering, has anything been found on the dark side of the moon regarding these structures?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
She's asking, Jim, if anything have been found on the dark side of the moon that's comparable to what I'm talking about on these photographs, these artificially appearing structures.
Yeah, I would not be able to comment on that. Most of my research has taken place on the near side of the moon for obvious reasons. That's where the bulk of the photographs exist.
Or at least the bulk of the photographs that have been allowed to hit the public.
And ones that are clearly more visible. It's much darker and it's much harder to discern surface features on the dark side.
Yeah, the reason I was wondering, I had heard during one of the lunar voyages there that when the astronauts were behind the moon, that they had been approached by some kind of a craft that had come up from the dark side and there were some possible structures there. And that's why I was wondering if you had any information regarding that.
Yeah, again, unfortunately, you have a lot of these stories that have circulated for years and years, and it might be as difficult as trying to solve the JFK assassination and try and get down to the bottom of some of these stories.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, thanks a whole lot, then.
Okay, thank you for your call, Kathy.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Okay, Jim, we're going to have to take another break. This is one of the reasons we want to go to 2 hours, because it always ends up that we never have enough time. So hold on, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Thanks.
We are back with my guest this evening, Jim Sullivan. Jim, on several of these craters that we have photographs of can only be described as being absolutely bizarre appearing. I have volume 1, picture number 3, which appears to be a mountain within a mountain surrounded by a crater with some very odd shaped cuts or something which are on the crater floor. Can you explain that?
Yeah, there's, again, when we were talking about these type of craters that don't appear to be a result of meteorite impacts, you see these X-drone shapes, X-drone for lack of a better term, or L-shape.
Well, that's what George Leonard in his book called it.
That's X-drone. Correct. And the only function that we've been able to discern that they are serving is to actually shave the edges of these craters to almost knock the debris down to the crater floor. And what happens down there is anybody's guess. If you believe the theory that this is possibly a mining exercise, then that might be an area where some of these minerals might be processed.
Well, manufacturing metals and many things would appear to be in a zero-G environment, or the moon is what, one-sixth of Earth's
gravity? One-sixth
of
Earth's gravity.
Right. It would be much easier up there.
Many elements that are that are found on Earth are actually found on the moon in very pure forms, titanium being one of them. And again, it's anybody's guess as to why these objects appear and what they're actually doing.
Well, do you know that as of the Apollo 12 mission, the folks that took part in the Apollo 12 mission left. Now, this is according to the Daily News newspaper that I referenced earlier, November 29, 92. $517 million worth of equipment, including 3 moon buggies, that we left up there. I mean, we're talking about tremendous amounts of equipment. We're talking about billions of dollars to get there to begin with. I mean, an entire generation pitched in when Kennedy suggested it back in 61, but suddenly we left it high and dry. Have you talked to anybody in NASA or any of the former astronauts about that?
I've talked to quite a few scientists in the private community that say there's increased interest now in going back to the moon, and obviously you read this in the paper, this is nothing secret, actually establishing a colony on the moon, with expressed interest, interestingly enough, to mine minerals. So that's in NASA's mind. I would tell you that my interest in this research is really to try and to develop kind of a groundswell of excitement about going back to the moon. You know, we hear about going back to Mars. We've launched a unmanned craft now to go back to Mars. I believe it'll arrive in another 12 months or so.
In August,
okay, which is fine. The moon, I would think, would be a better bang for your buck at this point. It's obviously much closer. The resources that would be necessary to travel there and start investigating some of this phenomenon would be a fraction of what it's costing to go back to Mars.
Well, when I spoke to Richard Hoagland the other day, and we were talking about some of this research having to do with the lunar phenomenon, he informed me that right now the Japanese, and I haven't heard a thing about it in the news, and I haven't, is quite frankly, had time to verify it, but Hoagland claims he verified that the Japanese right now have an unmanned mission in orbit about the moon. Now, do you really think that they're up there without cameras?
No. Especially the Japanese, no. And I would think if anybody would have high-resolution cameras that could really shed some more light on what's actually taking place up there. And let's say right off the bat, we don't know if these are ancient constructions. We don't know if they're active at this point. Certainly a phenomenon is continually being reported. But some of these structures, some of these objects, some of these mining equipment appears to be quite ancient and broken down.
So in other words, we're talking about not only is planet Earth polluted here, but it seems like the moon may be also?
Maybe, and the way that I like to approach it is that you may be actually looking through a window of time when you look at some of these objects, much the way you're looking through time when you're looking at the Mars statue face that Richard Hoagland has done so much to promote.
Well, Hoagland claims that his face on Cydonia, and I say his face, and I really can't state that he owns it. But he says that the face on Mars is approximately 500,000 years old. Now, he's claiming that some of the information he just became privy to that is allegedly on the moon would go far beyond that, into the millions of years. And that seems almost unbelievable. I mean, you know, millions of years. But yet, he said to me, how long do you think Neil Armstrong's footprints will last on the moon? And short of something coming down and striking it, it could be there literally for millions of years.
That's a good point. In fact, that golf ball may be still circling the moon.
Did they put it in orbit?
Yeah, well, I can't remember which astronaut. Somebody snuck a club and a golf ball on and actually took a swing. And
I remember that.
Yeah, and that, who knows, that may still be going around. But you're quite right. In all seriousness, some of these objects appear to be, broken down, almost appear, it almost looks like a ghost town, some of the areas that these objects are contained in.
Okay, let me take time for another quick break, and when we come back, we have some more phone calls.
Good.
To the phones. And I have Evan from United Artists in Sherman Oaks. Good evening, Evan.
How are you, Don?
Hi, Evan.
Well, okay. Do you have a question for or a remark or comment for my guest?
Well, as Don already knows, I'm a longtime researcher into lunar photos, and I had a couple of photo numbers that I thought you might be interested in investigating when you got the chance.
I'd love it.
As a matter of fact, let me just break in really quickly, Evan, to tell Jim that the previous programs that we did on transient lunar phenomena was, in fact, with Evan.
Oh, okay, great.
For your records, the last name is Hayworth. And I'm with Group 680, which is an investigative committee.
Oh, great, terrific.
And we've been looking into a bunch of things, and here's a couple of photo numbers for your research.
Okay.
Flight 5, photo 154H. Series 123, that's the high res of 154M.
Now, what missions were these from, Evan?
That's Mission 5.
Mission 5.
Right. And one from Mission 3.
These are unmanned missions?
Right. These are the lunar orbiter missions flown in order to pick a landing spot for Apollo.
Okay.
You want Flight 3, photo 200. The M is interesting, but you really want H1, 2, and 3.
H1, 2, and 3?
Right.
Evan, what do these purport to show?
Well, I'm not going to tell you what to find.
Okay.
Come on, Evan, that's not fair. We've got a million people out here listening, wondering what the hell you're talking about.
They can get these photos from NASA themselves and take a look. But
uh-huh.
Let me point out
that I have, even as we speak, a witness in Texas, former NASA employee, who is willing to testify that this individual saw NASA technicians routinely airbrush anomalous objects
you
out of the photographs.
Well, Evan, I did want to say a couple things. First off, the issue of airbrushing, some of the shadows that show up in these photos are obviously artificial. And I will tell you that, and I hope we can get this in, Don, before the end of the show, obviously these photos are available through myself, but as Evan has said, anybody willing to do the legwork and the research, NASA has on file over a million photographs.
Absolutely. And if you want to give the information right now, please, feel free.
Two things. First off, the research that I've done, that can be obtained through my company. It's called Lunar Photos, P.O. Box 471-152, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28247. And I will also tell your listeners that anybody that happens to be going out to D.C. or wants to try and research this on their own, NASA, room 6035, the address is 400 Maryland Avenue, Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20546. My photographs happen to be made from 8x10 negatives from NASA, so the clarity is pretty clear, and they're glossy photos. But again, this is nothing that's secret, hidden from the public. This is all available if you're willing to go out there and do the research yourself.
Most people, unfortunately, do not know what to look for, though.
Well, one of the best investments is to go to your government printing office and ask for NASA printing SP Samuel Peter 200. And that's the Lunar Orbiter Photo Atlas.
Chock full of many interesting
and
photos.
And it shows you everything that they're willing to admit they have.
Evan, I was hoping maybe Don can pass my phone number on to you off the air.
Well, I tell you what's going to happen. I think Tuesday is I'm going to be at his office looking at your photograph.
Ah, terrific. I'll see you there.
Yes, let me state that UFO Magazine has new offices here in Sunland. If anybody is coming through Sunland, they want to stop by the offices or pick up a magazine, the only thing I'm going to tell you is it's on Foothill Boulevard, and I'm going to make you look for it.
Well, listen, Don, I'm going to get out of the way and let some other people get on the air. I was really sorry to hear Tracy wasn't going to be on tonight, but then we'll look forward to him on the 7th.
Oh, well, no, he never was going to be on tonight. He was going to be on a week before the movie premieres. I had Jim scheduled. I wanted to do this moon stuff. I've got to admit, I've got a great love and a fascination for this.
Yes, indeed. Don't we all?
Okay. Thanks
nice
for your call,
to you,
Evan.
Sure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Jim, we're down here in the last few minutes of the program. Once again, these hours just shoot by unbelievably quick.
Oh, yeah.
What is the focus of your future research now? Do you have any plans on this?
Well, luckily, since I'm now on the East Coast, Washington, D.C. is about a seven-hour drive for me, and I happen to be up there quite a bit. So I will continue to go through this math, and literally it's a huge file drawer full of photographs, and to see with the disregard that NASA has treated these photographs. Some of these are shoved in, dog-eared, not kept in any particular order. I will continue to go through these. My whole effort here is to try and generate enough interest for us, much the way Hoagland is, perhaps to go back to the moon and take a look at some of these objects again.
Well, he expressed, I have to tell you, he expressed an interest in these photographs, and when I speak to you this coming week, I'll tell you how you can get in touch with him.
Terrific.
But, you know, one last quick question I have here with these photographs as they appear. In photograph, I guess it's volume 2, picture number 1, off to the left-hand side, I couldn't quite make out yet whether that's a string of craters on the surface of the moon or whether it's a piece of the spacecraft that's in orbit. It's really hard to tell.
You're talking about that arm that comes. Yeah, that's actually part of the. And you're talking about the crater Lubinsky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually some type of a track that's actually on the moon. That's not part of the spacecraft that photographed that.
That is an actual track?
Yes, that's an actual track. Now, there's another photograph that obviously shows part of the spacecraft, and I believe it was a lunar orbiter that was taking that shot, which would have been, actually it was Apollo 16.
Well, I truly wish I could show these to the audience.
It's difficult, I know, Don, over the radio, but
Well, that's how we met, right?
Yeah, that's true, but anybody that is interested, they can reach me at that address, and...
Let me give that one more time. You would write that in care of Jim Sylvan.
Right.
Post Office Box 471152. That's in Charlotte, North Carolina. Zip code is 28247.
That's correct. There's two volumes right now of moon photos that are available, five photographs each. Those are with a summary. Those are $39.95.
We're out of time. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Hope you enjoyed this edition of Don Ecker Live.
Oh, that was Larry King.
Hey, well, that's okay.
Go ahead. Give your spill.
Well, I was just going to say, and then there's also, I do have copies of the Mars statue face in a Mars Volume 1, consists of three photographs, and those are 1995, and it's a nice 8x10 shot for those that have not been able to obtain that picture.
Very good, Jim. Well, look, this has been an absolutely fascinating hour. I would love to have you come back.
That'd be great, and I'll tell you, I'll bring you some more goodies on Tuesday, and we'll have a sit down and see what we can find in these pictures.
Very good, and hang on the line for just a moment.
You betcha.
Okay. Okay, folks, that's it for another week. Next week, my guest is going to be screenwriter Tracy Torme. This is going to be a show that you're not going to want to miss. You're going to hear all about the new movie, Fire in the Sky, The Abduction of Travis Walton. The following week after that, we have a gentleman that many of you may not have heard of before, but yet he is a fascinating guest, going all the way back to the very early 1960s. He was one of the principals with J. Allen Hynek and Jacques Vallée. His name is Fred Beckman. We're going to hear about some fascinating stuff from the early days of UFO research. Tonight, I would like to thank our sponsor, the Unarius Academy of Science. To find out more about them and what they have to offer, you can call them toll-free at 800. Now, I'll see you next month. Keep your eyes to the skies, and hey, listen to my song. Come on, baby, don't need a reason.